Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. It is time to find out how much of a symptom sleuth you are. We're going to read a medical mini-quiz to find out if you can diagnose 10 conditions. So you possibly want something to write with or on, although the answer is going to be given right after each question. From the Discover Magazine special issue on medical mysteries, published in September 2018, we will also hear an article on how a wife used her nose to convince her husband's doctor he needed treatment. Mind the Signs is written by Christian Millman. A patient walks into a doctor's office. "What brings you here?" asks the doc. "Well, I'm not sure," says the man, "but it hurts when I touch my shoulder, it hurts when I touch my knee, it hurts when I touch my ankle, and it hurts when I touch my nose." The doctor checks the man over closely before pronouncing his diagnosis. "You have a broken finger." If you saw that one coming a mile away, then take a crack at the following quiz questions and really test your medical mettle. Question number one, you have the following symptoms: explosive vomiting and diarrhea, often at the same time, severe nausea and stomach cramping, low-grade fever, shivers, chills, and muscle ache. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A, an impending visit from your mother-in-law. B, a norovirus. C, the flu. D, the stomach flu. And the correct answer is B. People often confuse a norovirus with the flu or so-called stomach flu. True flu, or influenza, is a respiratory infection, and there's no medical diagnosis called stomach flu. That's a folk term. A norovirus is highly contagious, comes on suddenly, and causes 1 to 3 days of moaning in a fetal position on the bathroom floor. It spreads best in such crowded places as cruise ships, schools, hospitals, and nursing homes. Number two, you have the following symptoms. Part of the white of one eye has turned blood red. Your vision is unaffected. There's no pain. There's no discharge. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A, a subconjunctival hemorrhage. B, a bar fight. C, pink eye. D, allergies. The correct answer is A. The outside of your eyeball is covered with a thin, clear membrane called the conjunctiva. Occasionally, a tiny blood vessel bursts underneath it, flooding the surrounding area with blood. It looks creepy, or depending on your perspective, zombie cool, but it's almost always harmless and heals in about a week. Most of the time, a cause is never determined, but can be from violent coughing, sneezing, vomiting, or even a set of overzealous squats. Number three, you have the following symptoms. A flattened, scaly area appears on your skin. It develops into a circular rash with a red border and clearer skin in the middle. Sometimes red bumps appear within the border. Your dog sleeps in your bed. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A, leprosy. B, a paintball strike. C, eczema. D, ringworm. The answer to three is D. Despite the vermicular vernacular, ringworm isn't a worm, but a fungus, closely related to the fungi behind athlete's foot and jock itch. It's also one of the more widespread zoonotic diseases, those which can be passed from human to animal to human, and dogs are common carriers. In most cases, it's easy to treat. You simply apply antifungal cream to the affected area until it's gone. Get it from your pharmacist and vet. Number four, you have the following symptoms: fever, sore throat, headache and fatigue, back and neck pain or stiffness. Within a week, a noticeable slowdown in your reflexes, loose and floppy limbs, often more so on one side of the body. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A, a stroke. B, polio. C, a hangover. D, multiple sclerosis. And the answer to number 4 is B. More specifically, paralytic polio, the version that put many children of previous generations in iron lungs and wheelchairs. Although the last naturally occurring case of polio in the U.S. was in 1979, the disease remains either endemic or present in other parts of the world, such places as Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Nigeria. Also, since late 2012, at least 20 cases of a mysterious polio-like illness have been seen in children in California. The disease, which shares many features with polio, including permanent loss of muscle function, still hasn't been identified. Question 5, you have the following symptoms. A pulsating feeling near your belly button, it may have been there for a while, a deep and constant abdominal pain, back pain, you're male, and either a smoker or former smoker. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A, an umbilical hernia, B, appendicitis, C, an abdominal aortic aneurysm, D, an alien is about to hatch from your stomach. And the correct answer to number 5 is C. You may remember an abdominal aortic aneurysm as the killer of actor John Ritter. Men, especially those with a smoking history, have a much increased risk for this ballooning of the aorta as it runs through the abdomen. An ultrasound exam for those older than 60 screens for its presence. Caught early, it's eminently treatable. If it ruptures, it's almost impossible to survive. 6. You have the following symptoms. A big toe that burns like fire in the middle of the night, intensifying pain in that toe, or sometimes other joints, usually most severe in the first 12 to 24 hours after it starts. Redness and swelling in the affected joint. Discomfort and aching that linger for days or weeks after the real pain stops. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A. Lucy pulled the football away and you stubbed your toe. B. Rheumatoid arthritis. C. Your shoes are too tight. D. Gout. And the correct answer is D. Gout used to be known as the rich man's disease because it generally affected men who could afford overindulgent lifestyles, full of booze and fatty foods. But these days, it doesn't check the contents of your wallet before it decides to hobble your stride. It's a complex and separate type of arthritis that usually strikes men. It's caused by an overabundance of uric acid in the blood, which forms sharp, pain-causing crystals that build up in joints. Treatment can come from a host of drugs as well as such lifestyle changes as avoiding alcohol and decreasing meat intake. Question 7. You have the following symptoms. You crave and crunch ice cubes. You're exhausted all the time. Your hands and feet are constantly cold. You get tingling or crawling feelings in your legs. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A. Iron deficiency anemia. B. Sickle cell anemia. C. MDMA, ecstasy withdrawal. D. Ants in your pants and you need to dance. And the answer to 7 is A. Iron deficiency anemia causes big and widespread problems. Your body needs iron to produce hemoglobin, and your body needs hemoglobin to transport oxygen throughout it. With anemia, it's basically as if every function in your body is slowly suffocating. It can be caused by a bleed somewhere in your body, say from an ulcer, a uterine fibroid, or a colon polyp. Or it can be caused by a lack of iron in your diet or an inability to absorb iron. Treatment typically involves taking iron supplements, identifying the cause, and other remedies based on the particular cause. Question 8. You have the following symptoms. Sudden fever and a severe headache that feels different than any you've had before. Pain in your neck when you try to touch your chin to your chest. Confusion and overwhelming sleepiness. Sensitivity to light to the point where it hurts. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A. Flu. B. Meningitis. C. The undead bite of a vampire. Or D. Rabies. And the answer to question 8 is B. The early signs of meningitis are often confused with the flu, delaying the immediate treatment that's needed to avoid shock, seizures, brain damage, even death. The key differences to look for are the unusual headache, neck pain, extreme drowsiness, making it difficult to even wake up, and the sensitivity to light. Seek medical help right away. Question number 9. You have the following symptoms. A rash shaped like a bullseye that expands over several days then goes away. Flu-like symptoms that clear up in a few days. Nothing for a while, perhaps days or weeks. Facial tics or twitches begin. Joints swell and ache like arthritis. Shooting pains that wake you up. All of which may come and go for months or years. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A. Chronic fatigue symptom. B. Lyme disease. C. Fibromyalgia. Or D. The Sunday night blues. The answer to 9 is B. Lyme disease. Often goes undiagnosed and untreated for long periods of time, even years. By then, it has had a chance to do some real damage, including arthritis, cognitive problems, or Lyme carditis, a potentially fatal infection of the heart. The problem with the tick-borne disease is that its temporary telltale rash around the bite is often missed if it's on the scalp or someplace else difficult to see. And the rest of the symptoms are vague enough to be confused with other conditions. If you have any of the related symptoms, get to your doctor as soon as possible and ask for the blood tests to rule Lyme in or out. A round of antibiotics, especially when taken in the early stages of infection, can cure many cases, although some people may need a longer course of treatment. And our last question, number 10. You have the following symptoms. A superhuman sense of smell, especially for repulsive scents. Extreme mood swings, even if you're as laid back as a barca lounger. Frequent urination and constipation. You feel funny, just funny, and not funny ha-ha. Which of these is the most likely explanation? A. Another impending visit from your mother-in-law. B. Ovarian cysts. C. PMS. D. Pregnancy. And the correct answer to our last question is D. Before the toe-tapping wait for lines to show up on a test stick, there are numerous unusual early signs of pregnancy. These are only a few of the lesser-known ones. Well, lesser-known to men, anyway. Women also report just knowing, even though they cannot explain how or why. Scoring, give yourself 1 point for every correct answer. A perfect 10. You're an avid reader of Discover's Vital Signs column, or you've had medical training. Either way, well done. 8 to 9, smart. Really smart. Can we be your friend? 6 to 7, above your average bear, which would be better if this were a veterinary medicine quiz. 4 to 5, you know a bit, just enough to be dangerous. 3 or below, don't touch us, not even in an emergency. On next, also from Discover, Medical Mysteries of a Wife and a Whiff, written by H. Lee Kagan. Jerry was in fine form as he stood at center stage, his hand resting on the microphone stand, waiting for the laughter to subside. He had invited me to watch him perform stand-up at this West Los Angeles comedy club, and he didn't disappoint. But his wife, Sandy, wasn't laughing. She leaned across the small cabaret table we were sharing and said, "I need to talk to you about Jerry." They'd been patients of mine for many years. Both were late middle-aged, and neither had ever had a serious medical problem. I looked at her quizzically, and she said, "His breath." I leaned closer and asked, "What about his breath?" "It's different. Not bad, but it's changed. Something's not right." "How long?" "Maybe 3 months." I asked if anyone else had mentioned anything, and she shook her head. "How does he feel?" "He says he feels fine, but something is wrong. I'm his wife and I can tell. Something has changed." I looked up at Jerry. He was pulling faces now, mimicking his elderly father as part of his routine. The audience was loving it. "Have him come see me in the office," I told Sandy. "Honest to God, Doc, I'm fine," Jerry insisted a week later. "If you ask me, I think it's my wife's sniffer that needs a checkup." Jerry did indeed look well, and when I put my face close to his and asked him to exhale through an open mouth, I could detect no unusual or unpleasant odor. Likewise, when I had him breathe out through his nose, nothing struck me as especially noxious. He told me there'd been no recent dental problems, sores in his mouth, or other symptoms. He didn't wear dentures and hadn't begun using any new medications or supplements. The examination of his nose, mouth, tongue, throat, and gums was unremarkable to my internist's eye. I took one more sniff. Nothing. Frankly, I wasn't sure that anything was wrong, but I told him to go see his dentist. "I was there just 3 months ago," he protested. "Everything was okay." I nodded and said, "See him again anyway." Halitosis, defined as a foul or fetid odor carried on the breath, originates in the oral cavity or sinuses 80 to 90% of the time. The literature reports that it occurs in about 15 to 30% of the population. Since it is often difficult to notice one's own odor, millions of people walk around with bad breath and don't know it. The malodor of halitosis usually results from the bacterial breakdown of amino acids in food debris, saliva, blood, and postnasal drip in the oral cavity. The residue of everything from caviar to cannoli provides the raw material for the volatile sulfur compounds primarily responsible for the offensive smell. Concentrations of the culpable microbes are particularly heavy in the spaces between the teeth and gums and on the back of the tongue. The nasal passages and sinuses are the second most common sources of bad breath. Less common causes in the mouth are diseases such as gingivitis. Although an assortment of illnesses, such as advanced kidney disease and liver failure, can cause unpleasant odors on the breath, it is rare for any of them to produce halitosis without any other signs or symptoms. 2 weeks later, I got a call from Sandy. "So, what did the dentist find in your husband's mouth?" I asked. "Nothing," she told me. "The dentist didn't even think his breath was bad. He just told him to floss regularly and gave him a toothbrush. But I know something's wrong. Can't you just give him some antibiotics?" She was obviously frustrated. I told her I didn't think that was a good idea, although interdental and gingival sources of malodor may be transiently improved with antibiotics that suppress bacterial counts. In Jerry's case, I didn't know what, if anything, I would be treating. "Let me see him in the office again," I suggested. The following afternoon, Jerry and Sandy sat in my exam room. When I asked him how he was feeling, Jerry said he was still doing just fine. "But my wife smells ghosts," he quipped. He and I smiled and looked over at Sandy. "I am not crazy," she insisted. "Of course not," I said. I asked her if she had noticed changes in the odor of any other things that she smelled. Foods, other people's breath. She shook her head vigorously before I was even done asking the question. "No, it's not me. I checked." She went on to tell me that she had Jerry take an over-the-counter ulcer medication for a week in case a stomach problem was the cause, but it hadn't made any difference. "Not surprising," I told her, "halitosis almost never arises from the esophagus, stomach, or intestine." Undaunted, she repeated, "Something's wrong." I thought for a moment and then said, "Fair enough. You know, sometimes conditions in the lungs can cause the breath to be bad. Let's do a chest x-ray." Even though I was certain that the yield on the x-ray would be small, I wanted to be able to tell her we had turned over every stone in search of the cause of Jerry's non-problem. So even though Sandy was the only one who thought her husband's breath was bad, even though Jerry had no symptoms, findings, or risk factors whatsoever, and even though his lungs sounded clear when I listened to them at his first visit, I had my medical assistant walk him down the hall for the chest film. Several minutes later, my assistant put the x-ray up on the view box in my office. I took one look and had to suppress an expletive. Sitting in Jerry's right mid-lung was a rounded density with a central cavity containing air and fluid. It was the radiographic signature of an abscess. Amazingly, Jerry had been harboring a chronic infection in his right lung, but it had not been accompanied by any of the typical symptoms of an abscess: fever, cough, sputum production, sweats, and weight loss. He had none of them. None, that is, except for an odor on his breath. The smell of purulent sputum incubating deep within a lung may waft its way up the bronchial tree, resulting in serious halitosis. But in Jerry's case, the odor was so subtle that it took the exquisitely sensitive olfactory memory of his wife to pick up the change. The ghosts she smelled were real, and antibiotics were exactly what it was going to take to get rid of them. Adding to my surprise was the fact that Jerry had none of the risk factors associated with a lung abscess. Among patients with intact immune systems, not compromised by HIV or chemotherapy, for example, lung abscesses occur most frequently in those with conditions that impair the swallowing mechanism and allow for the aspiration of food or saliva into the lungs. Disorders such as strokes or neurodegenerative disease and conditions that depress consciousness like alcoholism, seizures, and drug abuse can all predispose to oral contents going down the wrong pipe. When coupled with poor dental hygiene, which can lead to the buildup of bacteria, these disorders set people up for aspiration pneumonias, infections that can smolder and destroy normal lung tissue, literally rotting out a dead zone in the lung. But in a small number of cases, lung abscesses may arise in the absence of any identifiable risk factor. It is possible that Jerry had a congenital anomaly in his bronchial tree that led to the pooling of mucus and eventually to infection, but it is impossible to know for certain. In the pre-antibiotic era, lung abscesses were fatal one-third of the time and left another third with lifelong debilitating lung disease. The introduction of lobectomy, the surgical removal of part of the lung, improved these numbers, but an extended course of antibiotics long ago replaced surgery as the mainstay of treatment for these infections. In consultation with an infectious disease expert, I started Jerry on clindamycin, a potent antibiotic effective against the anaerobic or non-oxygen-consuming bacteria that most frequently populate this type of infected cavity. After 6 weeks, an X-ray showed the abscess had shrunk down to a stable and probably permanent scar on Jerry's lung. There was no reason to expect any recurrence, but had Jerry's abscess gone undiagnosed, it might well have continued to grow and could have eventually necessitated the surgical removal of part of his lung. At a visit shortly after finishing the antibiotic course, Jerry told me he had gained new respect for both his wife's dogged persistence and her uniquely talented nose. Then he said he was considering adding a bit to his stand-up routine about hiring his wife out to the bomb squad at the LA International Airport. Or, I suggested, maybe you could just get her a bouquet of sweet-smelling flowers and take her out to a nice dinner. And in case you end up with any of these medical emergencies from these diagnoses, we have How to Navigate a Health Emergency from the April 2019 issue of Consumer Reports on Health by Laura Entis. Your stomach starts to cramp. The pain is so sharp and sudden that it's hard to walk. What do you do? The more you know about what to do and where to go, the better equipped you'll be to act quickly and decisively. When should you call 911? Anytime a person is unresponsive or has a major change in behavior, head to the ER, says Jeffrey L. Pellegrino, PhD, professor of health sciences at Altman College in Canton, Ohio. Other reasons an ambulance should be called include breathing problems, chest pains, bleeding that can't be stopped with direct pressure, severe burns, broken bones, coughing up or vomiting blood, sharp abdominal pain, an unexplained seizure, and signs of a stroke, facial drooping, arm weakness, or speech difficulty. If you're unsure about whether something is a real emergency, many insurers offer 24/7 nurse lines in which a trained professional will help you assess the severity of a situation. Check with your insurance company to see whether this service is provided under your plan. What happens when you call? All 911 calls are answered by trained dispatchers, who can first help determine whether emergency services are required. Be prepared to answer questions about the nature of the problem as clearly and calmly as possible. The dispatcher will also ask for your phone number and your exact location, or the location of the person in need of aid, including details such as whether your front door is unlocked or your house has a gate. Which ambulance will come? The answer has nothing to do with your insurance or your complaint, says Letha Ganti, MD, a professor of emergency medicine and neurology at the University of Central Florida College of Medicine in Orlando. The ambulance provider that covers your geographic area will be the one that responds. You'll generally be taken to the closest facility for treatment, but if you're stable, you can ask the EMTs whether they would consider taking you to a preferred facility, Ganti says. The cost of an ambulance is often covered, but the bill can be high when it's not, if the service is out of network or deemed unnecessary, for example. Can you drive yourself? In a true emergency, driving yourself or having someone else drive you is fraught with risk and uncertainty, Pellegrino says. You could put your life at risk, especially if your situation becomes more serious on the way there. Ambulances and EMTs are equipped to handle an escalating emergency, and the hospital will know about your condition and be ready to treat you quickly if necessary when you arrive. An ER or urgent care. Emergency departments, whether freestanding or attached to a hospital, are staffed by emergency physicians and open 24/7, equipped to treat or stabilize patients. Freestanding facilities, however, don't allow surgery, for example. Should you require more extensive care, you'll be transferred. All ERs are required to provide service regardless of a patient's ability to pay. Urgent care centers accept walk-ins, and wait times are usually shorter than at emergency departments. Unlike ERs, however, at urgent care centers, which aren't always open 24/7 and aren't required to provide service to people who can't pay, you might not see a physician. Instead, these centers are a convenient option for treating less serious illnesses and injuries, such as ankle sprains, cuts, the flu, a fever, nausea, and rashes. To be prepared. A health emergency can be stressful and overwhelming. Keep an up-to-date list of medical conditions and current medications, along with any over-the-counter drugs or supplements you take. Keep your contact information up to date, and keep your legal and medical documents up to date. That's it for today. Thank you for tuning in to Sound Body. Stay well, and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.